Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we sit together in a car ride to somewhere on a journey, keeping each other company, getting on each other's nerves. But it's together, and we're headed somewhere, and we came from somewhere. But right now, we're nowhere. We're nowhere, baby.
KKW traffic and weather, partly cloudy skies.
Oh, this one looks good.
Do it.
The toll agent, apropos of sunshine, in sight of owls, happy golden as J. Bob Register, three episodes of The Cab Brokers, Kitchen at the End of Time, Limerick 3, Sweep the Brine, the Peter Ship story, Chevy Casanova, Limericks with an S, two episodes of Monkey Quartz Project, Jack in Time, The Misgivings of a Strawberry Mime, Shayla, Limerick, So Long You Can Blanket, I guess that's Limerick 1, Capon Tree, For the Love of Gosh, Mirrors for Harold as Jackson B. Register, Pony Mary, The Crease of the Great Night Moon, Alonzo's Fire, 10 episodes of The Michigans. He started on The Michigans. 7 episodes of You Asked Farming. I don't know that one. That's quite the IMDb. I wonder if he's related to me. Probably not, because he has such an extensive, successful career. Yeah, but sometimes families have only one of those. So true. You know, I'm the star of my family. Oh, really? I thought all your family were dead.
Shut up.
You know, to make the time pass...
Why would we want to do that?
Well, to make the time pass before we get to where we're going, and I'm not even sure where that is. Where are we going, Butch?
I'm not sure. It doesn't matter.
All right. Well, how do you know which direction to go?
I know where I'm going. It's all instinct.
All right. Well, listen. I thought to pass the time, or to kill the time, that's an even better expression. I like to think about killing the time. Sneaking up behind it, slitting its weird, you know, I don't know if it even has a throat.
You're odd.
It's just so relentlessly linear. Anyway, if we're gonna kill it, I thought I could kill it with this performance art idea I have.
What is it?
Well, listen, I'm going to do kind of a, I don't know, beatbox interpretation of some favorite pop songs of mine.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Well, I said kill time, and to kill time, sometimes you have to weaponize language or art.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So, here, let me stab your moment for you. This is going to be my interpretation of... California Dreamin'.
All right.
All the leaves are brown, ding 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 bong, ding 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 boom, and in the sky he is gray blue down, but in the day they bond in the neen dum, baby dum the dinner dinner dive, but hey, when you wham, but the one that walk on that ink, winder than the day, oh day, oh day, oh bell, oh bubba 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 bubba. For I was in L.A.
Stop. I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to drive off a cliff.
There's no cliffs around here.
I'll find one. I'll make one. I'll stop the car, I will get out, and I will dig with a shovel until there is a hole so deep that if you fall off the edge, you will perish. Do you understand that? I'll drive us right off the edge of it because you are pushing me off the edge of reason. You are asking me to cope with an aesthetic affront to my very psyche as I'm driving. And this is a violation of the driver's code, which is, I am the captain of this car. I shall dictate what's on the radio, I shall dictate the conversation, and you will not do annoying and confrontational and provocative performance art while you sit in the passenger seat of this car. Is that an understanding?
Yes, Butchie, I'm sorry.
All right. And get me the other phone book.
Here.
I'm having a hard time seeing. Yeah. All right. Also, this beaded seat back.
What beaded seat back?
The beaded seat back I'm leaning against.
There's no beaded seat back.
Why do I feel that way?
Butchie, there's bumps all over your back.
What? What are you talking about?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, cut it out.
But what if you did? What if spiders had made, like, little kind of fortresses in your back, and they looked like a beaded seat back, but they were all spider nests?
That's horrifying. Again, why are you doing this while I'm driving?
I'm trying to create an atmosphere.
Well, it's one I don't want to stay in.
Well, I'm not exactly excited about staying in the car either. So, by making being in the car unbearable, hopefully, we'll be at the end of our journey sooner.
But if it takes 8 hours regardless...
If a day takes hours, I'm getting out. Let me out now.
No, but I mean the... Oh, forget it. The length of the journey is not affected by your relative perception of it.
Oh.
So it doesn't matter if it's taken forever or a short period of time.
I get it.
We still got to get to the flea market.
Well, which flea market?
I haven't decided.
Well, I bet there's a lot of them.
Yep.
Hey, don't forget, take AW's big
we could be driving for an hour, 2 hours, 2 days, 3 days. This Sunday, every week, chance to win, 5 days, some days.
What's wrong?
I don't know, man. Sometimes the radio being on at the same time we're having a conversation is a little distracting.
I need it, though.
All right.
It's like ASMR for me.
All right.
It helps tune you out.
I guess I understand.
What is that odor?
That's not me. If it's coming from outside, you just let more of it in.
Yeah, that's a good point. Why is it that some towns you drive through smell like intestinal gas?
I don't know. I think it's the... maybe sow discord in cars, so people think it's somebody else and that they're lying.
Yeah, could be.
Do you remember Poot City?
No.
It was like that. I don't know what its real name was. We just called it Poot City.
Jacksonville?
Could be. I think somebody said it was some kind of pulpwood plant.
Pulpwood?
Pulp.
Pulp?
Pulp.
Pulp?
Pulp. From trees. You know, it's something they put in it to break it down to turn a tree into paper.
Ah.
How long we've been driving?
Unbelievable, just 8 minutes.
8 minutes?
8 minutes.
Out of?
Don't know, 10 hours?
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. Really makes you think.
I wish I could. I wish I could think. It'd be lovely to sit here and think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't really need me to entertain you.
I didn't want to be rude, but I wish you'd shut up or die or something.
Oh, okay. Glad you didn't hurt my feelings. Sometimes I imagine that we're driving in another country, and you're on the other side of me.
What?
Well, you know how, like, in this country, the steering wheel's on the left, but in other countries, the steering wheel's on the right.
Yeah?
So sometimes I imagine that you're driving, but I'm sitting over there, and you're sitting here, but you're driving.
Wow. What an imagination you have.
Yeah.
It's like I just imagine a mirror world sometimes. It saves a lot of speculative space, brain-wise. You know, instead of having to imagine a completely different place, I just take the one we're in and I flip it. Go, what would it be like if I was over there and I was just different, but just like mirror different?
Yeah.
So that, like, the slogan on my shirt might be gibberish. Speechless?
I am speechless. I am speechless. I'm nonplussed.
What frequency do you think that is?
What?
What frequency do you think the air rushing in the window is?
What do you mean, what frequency?
I mean, it kind of sounds like fake wind rushing through a window noise that you might listen to at night to help you sleep, you know, like brown noise.
Oh, yeah, here's some brown noise. Did you hear that?
Oh, God, no.
Uh-oh.
What?
Never mind.
Never mind what?
Never mind.
Aren't we there yet?
There's no there to get to. You're really gonna have to adjust your sense of now. You expect too much. My gosh. Beat, 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 punchline. Beat, 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 punchline.
Yeah, that would be nice. I wish that real life had the same pacing as many of my favorite sitcoms. In reality, it has gaps. I guess it's really hard to sell people things if their emotions are inconsistent. Like, one minute they're happy, and then they're annoyed. Well, when they're annoyed, you don't want to introduce them to your special brand of cracker or hat or something. They may not like it, because you've just annoyed them. And so, you have to always be presenting them something delicious, like donuts. But donuts aren't great for you. And a steady diet of sweets.
Yeah.
Sticky floors.
Smell of, like, rum in the air.
Right.
And then Hardy White takes the stage.
But not as a musician.
Oh.
As a storyteller.
It's like he's blurring the lines even more now.
Totally.
Between, like, the character
right.
and his real self.
Exactly. Oh. Taking this character he's created and just, like,
right.
throwing him into a totally different world.
And the things he talks about,
yeah.
like, just as unexpected, right?
Yeah.
He talks about, like, being afraid of failure, his desire to connect with people.
Even, like, his self-doubt.
Yeah.
Incredibly yeah. personal stuff.
Oh, yeah. Super vulnerable.
Join now our solitary journey together. Together alone on a car trip across country, across time, across a lifespan. From our birth until our death. Sometimes alone, sometimes someone in the passenger seat, or in the back seat, or a passenger ourselves. As we drive and journey together, travel on a vacation, leaving somewhere, going somewhere else. And it's the trip that matters. The destination is somewhere that may never be gotten to. And the place we left, we may never return to. So from now on, it's just the space in the middle, the road, the car, and how we keep ourselves awake and driving. And the futility of the journey is so obvious. The sameness of the surroundings. The reflection of our face on the windshield, superimposed on the ever distant horizon and the rapidly passing road. We watch ourselves careen into the future. And we listen to the radio. Who are the voices? Are they real? We used to ask ourselves, is that person a character, or real, or an actor? And now we ask ourselves, is that person real, or is that a person?
That chance to, like, step outside ourselves,
right,
explore something new.
Yeah.
Find some comfort in knowing
right.
that other people get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Hardy White, he's got this, like, you know, this blend of humor, sincerity, philosophical stuff.
He offers, like,
a really unique way into those conversations.
There's a playfulness to it.
Right, totally.
Like, he doesn't take himself too seriously.
Right.
But then he'll, like, hit you with these really insightful,
right.
profound thoughts, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, do I like to poop. I think it just makes me feel alive a lot of times. Say, well, your standards are really low. You know, if that's all that you expect of yourself, you know, when you can't. That's what the old-timers say, now I understand. And, you know, makers, that used to mean something different to me. Sometimes it's a whiskey. Sometimes it's those who can still do-do. And that's an important thing to do. Eating, I just lost my dog, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And there was two things that he stopped eating. He wasn't able to eat. But first, he wasn't able to really go anymore. Couldn't do it. He'd be out there, and I'm thinking, that's now life's over. The pleasure of stooling, I don't know if that's a verb, but passing on the lawn like that. Oh, a dog's life. Time we waste. See, we live longer than dogs, but the time we waste dropping our pants to our ankles to poop, they don't have that. And it doesn't take them long. Imagine, people go into the bathroom, and they're in there so long that a lot of times we'll set up a little library. Say, I better put things in there. An entertainment system, a library, a landline. Because, you know, but then the dog has to go, and the dog goes out and goes, boop, bang, done. You know, unless there's something really, if it's ill. So it makes you think maybe we're eating the wrong. Maybe you're eating something that's wrong or something. The dogs are lapping up pond water and eating what's on the sidewalk, and they're moving their bowels like champs, and you're in there like, oh, I guess not today. What does that tell you? My friend and longtime listener Chris was saying, I'm glad you're going back to your roots, your colon health and everything. And thank you. But I've never known what I was talking about. And a lot of times it's a metaphor. For what? Well, there's a lot of things we digest. And Reader's Digest wasn't talking about using stomach acid to ruminate on ideas, ruminate, another thing, chewing your cud. We use all these kind of digestion metaphors for thinking and for processing information. Like that, like a cow, you know, chewing its rumen. Its rumen is chewing on its vomit, on the fibrous vomit that couldn't, so it's like, let's give it another shot. And that's to ruminate. And then we use it and say, I'm going to think about you know, I've got this idea, boss. All right, tell me about it. And, you know, I'm going to chew it up. I'm going to try to digest it. If I can't digest it, I'm going to puke it up and ruminate on it a little bit, and then I'll get back to you. But really, what are we getting? What are we trying to get out of it? Energy, which we immediately spend, and then exhaust, like a car. You say, well, there's a, you know, all fuel. You can't use all of it. It's not perfectly efficient. So everything you burn has something, ashes, stool, or exhaust. It's got to go somewhere, so it just disappears. Just because you can't see it, that's a thing. And people think, oh, I can't see it, so it doesn't matter. The waste is gone. You know, conservation of duty is that people should say that. So the energy is conserved. You can kind of see that, but the waste there just stays around. Oh, my goodness. There's still energy in it. We just don't have, you don't, It isn't easy to get it out. Well, if you find it, confront how to burn ashes, that's what I feel like I'm doing right here. I think philosophically or intellectually, I'm burning ashes. How are you doing it? I don't know. Well, I'm telling myself there's something there. Come on, there's still something there. Oh, I hope you can get something out of it. You know, hope this radio pipe isn't cached or whatever the kids are saying now. A lot of those terms are going to be passe. And I feel like all that already an old-timer. Slang. You know, like slang, there'd be slang in old songs. And you go, gosh, that doesn't mean that anymore. Like, oh, that pulled a boner. And you go, oh, dear. But now there's just even worse, you know, stuff that was benign. And you go, that's what that means now? Because that's a beloved cartoon character to me or something like that. Oh, language changes and you say, I want to hold on to it. I want to hold on to life. But here I am. Look at me. Time passages by you. So you see it fleeting by and you grab to hold on to the time, but it goes away, and then you stop and know. The great thing about being kind of tone deaf, I'm not saying I am, is that anything's a melody. And in the avant-garde, this is very important, because to be able to summon that up, say, how are they going all over like that? No, Hardy doesn't seem to be obeying any musical conventions that we know. It's like he's not even at the convention. It's like he went to the wrong hotel because they had similar names. So he's at a different convention altogether. And that is, I am. Oh, you know, I love people that are experimenting because it shows me guts. And it doesn't mean it's going to be good, but like, good for you. And it's even rewarding to see someone who's super confident spectacularly fail. How could you turn that down? So either way, it's win-win. It's like come see someone with tremendous self-confidence. Go for it. And take a chance on an outlandish idea. Now, will it be good? Or will it be bad? And either way, you win, right? Because if it's bad, you go, oh, I got to savor the humiliation of someone arrogant. And look at that, watch that fail. But it's also kind of liberating to watch that happen, too. Because you think, well, that also gives me permission to fail. And I would love the siblinghood of eternal failures is a wonderful thing. Because ultimately, we all, if you want to really, you know, when people die or get sick, and they do that horrible thing where they make it into a fail, say, oh, they lost their battle and everything, and people object to that, and that's all right. I understand that, and they should. If they all, you know, but also acknowledge we all lose our battle, so there's no way of really, shouldn't see it in terms of losing and winning. Well, there's no winning. Whoops. If we have to, we should lose the losing. We need to lose the winning. And I don't think that people want to let go of that so much. He won his battle with life. These are small little victories. And ultimately, my goodness. You see that like when you see a little bug going down the drain. You go, oh, he did the temporary gains there. That's good. It's like watching a football game. But with bugs going down drains. No, that's hard. I went into my little shed that I've converted into a club, and friends come over and we have drinks or food there, and it's got these curtains and I've got them tied back, and it's the winter almost, and I untied them to clean them and look at them, and there was, they were covered with an invasive species that's been here since about 2009, and that is stink bugs. Which are a type of brown shield bug from China. And they made their way over in the 2000s. And they came to this neck of the woods, or I guess around 09 or 10 or something, and moved on in. And now in the winter, when they don't have, I guess, a good source of water or whatever they need, or tomato plants, whatever they'd like to destroy and swarm, They come on, they find the nearest, like, curtains, and they go, you know, let's just hibernate here, and they cling on to it, these little stink bugs. And, you know, finding one, I've found them on my sock, but finding one is, you go, all right, gosh, there's other creatures on Earth. Finding dozens on one curtain, you feel like, oh my God, I'm in the pit of hell. I just don't realize it. But the ground is writhing with snakes and bugs and stuff like that. And it's like the Rime of the Ancient Mariner or something. All those creepy crawlies under there, and so am I. And that's frightening. So when it's difficult to encounter insects being really successful. But my word. So I gently but aggressively invited them off of the curtains. Boy, and they were tenacious. Boy, when a stink bug gets hold of a curtain for the winter, it's not going to let go. Isn't that like so many of us, my friends? Aren't we but clinging stink bugs that are hanging on with our little insect fingernails, shield beetle fingernails? And, you know, not once, and they could have, did they stink me up or anything. They knew I wasn't going to crush them. So none of them, I don't think, I mean, my sinuses are pretty bad. I might have missed it. But I don't think they put the stank on me. I think I would have noticed it. I've had bugs tried to use their stink weapons. Never had a skunk try to use it. I've had, locals try to use it and everything. But as far as animals and everything, the stink weapon. They could have, but, they're even called that. And it may be a misnomer. And there's other type of native shield bugs, and believe me, you'd know the difference. And I don't know what they did with the ones who live here. They've moved on or something. That was like that with anoles when I lived in Florida. And you tried to figure out, are these ones that belong here or don't belong? It gets, I don't want to make that decision for the reptile people. Are they people? Maybe. Really, I don't know. I don't speak their language. I'm looking in ignorance at everything. I've got to admit that. So I'm glad no one turns to me for anything. How should we conduct our lives? I'm so blessed that I'm not being asked that, really, directly. Sometimes people say, I learned something from Hardy. Well, you've learned something from a billboard. I mean, I'm not going to take it personally. So that's good, but thank goodness I didn't set out to do that. I think that would be an affront, and certainly I would be a fraud if I was here trying to teach you anything. And I believe that what I'm doing is donating my body to science in many ways. Now, you heard what those AI people said who were stealing Rob Rushen's article about me. It's so true. But that's what I have to offer you, is a little example of the human heart. So I'm going to open myself up like the Visible Man. Remember that toy that scared the hell out of you when you were a child? You'd have this thing called the Visible Man, and it was a person, and their skin was clear, and you could see all their internal organs. It was like, I want to be invisible. You want your skin invisible? Said the menacing genie. Well, I don't, zoom, and all of a sudden you think you're going to be invisible like see people naked, but really you're just invisible like now all they see is your liver and your skeleton and how it's just a cage around, it's just a meat cage. Oh, my goodness. How about that? It's like a stick hut filled with beef and or stuff they make into sausage. That's you, beautiful creature. And they'd have the Visible Man, and they'd say this is educational. And people love to look on the inside of people, but not really. Mostly they like this skin. And some people say, hey, I wouldn't even mind if there's a nicely tailored suit of clothes on that person. Because, you know, sometimes our skin fails us. And I'd look a little bit better in seersucker. Because what my skin now is what they call crepe. And so there's so many materials I can cover it with. I'd say, look at you, you got a new skin, Hardy. Yes, I did, because I have a new tailor. And he's made me a bespoke outerness. And I love it. It's my costume. And I show the world, too. I have that, too. That's my skin. And has that one aged? Oh, yes. That one's aged, too. And the skin of my personality that I show you now is more leathery and weather-worn than it used to be. And I got to rub certain creams into it and maybe even wash it with witch hazel, eschewing water, because I don't want it to dry out. You know, I've got to be so careful with my skin now because of all the modeling I do. I have done when I say modeling, I just make stuff out of clay, mainly ashtrays. But I love it. But what'll happen is I'll wipe my face while I'm doing it. And the thing with when you're working clay, especially on the wheel, is a lot of times, and you won't even know it, there is a ghost playing fingery footsies with you. And you don't know it till you wipe your face and get the ghost residue that we all seen from Ghostbusters. Well, it's not green and slimy, but it's real and it's ectoplasmic. And it dries your pores or can clog them. And you don't want any kind of whatever color heads pop up like that. And so you want a skincare is, that's what I say, they'll say like a cleanliness is right there next to godliness on a list of things that I care about when we're traveling together. It's actually above godliness. So for instance, you'd be like, two would be like washing butthole. Three would be like being charitable. And that's a fine order if we're traveling together. So cleanliness, yes, right there. It's next to godliness, but it really is like it's up there a little bit. I wouldn't mind if you smelled good and were just slightly, not unpleasant, saucy, you know, grumpy maybe even. That's fine. And maybe God is grumpy. I don't want to attribute human emotions to the creator of the universe. But, you know, and I don't mean to be cheeky, but maybe they're not the creator of all the universes. It's just a local thing. That'd still be pretty impressive. Say, wouldn't put down your God just because they just made your universe.
So, you know God's one of many.
Still, I like the one that made lions.
Well, all right then, but, you know,
I don't know how, but it probably doesn't work that way. But we all are very all or nothing with the philosophy. I've noticed that.
Like, oh, well, you know, the very definition of God is my definition. Well, that's good. That's handy.
I'm not here to be a theologian. But I could do that for you if you need it faked for your parents or something like that. Oh, I want to help you. I wouldn't mind. Could you pretend to be my theology professor, Hardy? Sure. My parents are coming for a visit, and I lied to them and said I was still at seminary and that you were my professor. You were coming for dinner. I'll do it. Don't worry about it. There's bad lying and there's good lying. Is there anything else that you want me to lie about? Like, are they wealthy? So maybe we could do some kind of con or something, make a little bit of something. I'll do it for free, but I don't want to let an opportunity slide like that if I'm going to come pretend or something. The only couple things I won't do, I won't pretend to be law enforcement, and I won't pretend to be a veteran, because I don't want these stolen valor people are no joke. Because I was going around... they used to get on, I'm vetoing this joke completely, I think, because it's so dated. I just realized that.
So it's a Georgie Jessel reference. And I can't make it because I don't remember anybody remembers him. And I hung out with a lot of people much older than me when I was young. So let's say I'm 12 and I know who Georgie Jessel is because my grandfather was born in 1906 and he's my friend. And so that's problematic. So now I'm talking to you and I'm going to make a joke about stolen valor and the Toastmaster General and Georgie Jessel. And I just, my brain goes, blah, 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 blah. Usually, I have disengaged my prefrontal cortex so that I may speak to you unencumbered by any self-judgment or self-censoring. The last thing I need to do is be inhibited. And so I will take out the front part of my brain by hitting it with something or drugs. No, I don't do that. I will it away. I say, no, go ahead and say it. That's my motto. And just make sure that every once in a while you go, don't listen to me or something like that. And I wonder if jazz musicians do that when they improvise. You know, don't listen to me. That's what I would yell out between my improvised riffs. Because you'd think, I don't know if people think that was, you know, are going to expect me to play that again. You know, that's some kind of new, I love that melody, do it again. I don't know what I did. I wasn't memorized. Are you supposed to memorize it when you improvise? Oh, that'd be rough. What would you be in a jazz band? You had to improvise, and then when you were done, they go, all right, now I want you to sit here for a minute and transcribe everything you did. Maybe you could. I know there was probably that level of genius out there. Oh, I live my life somewhere between a beagle and a podcast host. As far as intellect, you know, that's pretty far down. There's some podcast hosts that are skewing the whole thing. So I don't, you know, I think that's accurate. And I know myself, and I know what I don't even know what I don't know. So I think that's a sort of knowledge. Some people say, oh, it's wise to know what you don't know. I don't know. I know that I don't know. I know that what I know may not be true, but I also know that I don't really know what I don't know. So I have to live with that and at the same time value knowledge or try to know. How about that? That must be frustrating. Makes you want to give up. That's why anti-intellectualism has such a hold on some people. Because it's very, very frustrating to try to gain knowledge or to pursue the truth. You're going to be slapped around terribly. And I know that people, you know, it's, you don't want to have to ask directions at the furniture store, the foreign-owned furniture store, or the American-owned lumber store. You don't want to have to ask, but you should, or you're just going to wander around. But, you know, each time you ask, it's an acknowledgement that you are deficient, and you have to come to terms with that. I don't know. I'm still educatable. I'd like to think I got here and I know even more than I did when I was young, but I also took on the wisdom of self-doubt and uncertainty. And I like it, I love it, but it's forcing me into the wilderness like Nebuchadnezzar. I have searched for truth and I have lost the kingdom and control of my power. And now I must go forth a solitary creature, one that seems to be absolutely nothing in the universe. And still I quest for knowledge and the truth and understanding and connections with these other beings who I sense, I feel such a deep connection with, the good and the bad. I love them like I love myself. I loathe them like I loathe myself. I cringe at their sight the way I cringe at myself. I lust for them
the way I lust for myself. That last one I just put in there because that one's not as true, but I think it, you know what I mean. I meant it like Walt Whitman. Again, you know, sometimes the words I use the tamer, old-timey version. So it doesn't always mean, romance doesn't always mean kissy love. How'd you like that Foley? I like to do that. That's my cheek. What are you doing? I don't know. I always used it when I was doing a Garrison Keillor impression, because I could hear the wet, fleshy spittle of his dull monologue. I'm sorry. I know your life. He was great. I don't know. You know, it just sounded like a wet Sharpay ASMR to me or something. Just like that, like a slushy, jowly, really limited view of the human experience and what was enjoyable and a nostalgia for a certain exclusion and sameness and homogeneity. But mainly it was the spittle sounds that repulsed me. I'm a very basic person. That's how my grandmother used to vote. It was always astonished me. She just looked and said, oh, they're an odd one. All right. I don't know what criteria you're using. But bless your heart. And that's fine. That might be how a lot of people see the world and say, oh, that one's an odd one. And they're probably correct. But I would say to them, let me posit this. They're both odd, maybe, the candidates you're looking at. I'm not talking about contemporary things. This is my grandmother, so I don't know who she's saying this about. Let's say maybe Jimmy Carter or something. Oh, he seems odd. Okay. Because I guess that, you know, my grandmother was from a part of South Jersey where they're not allowed to see any other humans. And I don't know what that was all about. But she eventually got out and met people and everything like that and traveled around. But she was not well-traveled for a very long time. And so it's like going to see your people at the zoo or something. So, yeah, I've got a big portion of my family are golden lion tamarins, and they all live in one enclosure. And there are places in New Jersey like that. So I'm going to the Muldoon enclosure, you might say, at the New Jersey Zoo, and it could be anywhere. And you know this, bless you all this. Oh, I got, my grandparents and my aunt and Carney. I don't know where they live. I'm not mentioning specific towns or anything. But bless you all, shout out. I could just start yelling New Jersey towns like it's New Jersey hee-haw. It isn't, though. Salute. You stand up in the Pine Barrens like they do in the wheat fields of the old hee-haw show. Maybe all young people too young to remember that. But back in the day, there was just this absolutely run on hillbilly fetish. I don't know what to call it. It started in the 60s and went on into the 70s. But it was sort of this addiction to hillbilly stereotypes. So people just wanted to see folks in felt hats chewing on a piece of straw saying quaint things. And they had the Beverly Hillbillies and all, and then they had Hee Haw, which was a straight-up variety show. And they started this, and from what I read, the original cast, you know, maybe they were country folk, but it was like 60s, 70s, and they were high, very, very high, high on LSD and everything, making music. So there's a psychedelic aspect to it. So it was psychedelic, or hillbilly psychedelic is what Hee Haw is. And it's kind of appealing. And there's a lot of classic legacy country acts on it. as well. And then classic humor and everything. It was around for a long time. Hee-haw, look it up. And stereotype characters like Junior Samples. He has a similar name to I do. So I thought, is that named after candy? Maybe. Right? I don't know. Just like I'm named after bread. He's a Junior Samples. And one of them, I don't know. I can't remember all their names. I'm trying to think of products. But something Cracker. No, that'd be, no, wouldn't name any of them that. Snack Cracker. Ritz Cracker was one of the guys. Could be. That was the, you know, general vibe. Crackery. And you know, I don't mean to, I'm not trying to digress or just over, Cracker, that's such a Ritz Cracker, Andy Griffith is a Cracker. I'm not trying to do that, but, and I'm not trying to tie it all back in, but sometimes things occur to me and I think, should that knowledge be passed on? So sometimes your teachers will do that. And you think, well, they're digressing. But what they're also doing is that a lesson has just occurred to them. I was just talking to a young person that was taking a class with a fairly well-known avant-garde dance artist or movement performance artist, I should say. And the movement performance artist was teaching a class and was, and this is a philosophical choice, a pedantic choice on their part, is that they don't really plan. Their art and their teaching style is to go with the moment and to be inspired by the place and the situation and to fully improvise. So it's sort of like, do you remember on the Brady Bunch where they asked Jan or something, you know, about her boyfriend, what was his name? And she's lying. She looks around. She sees a glass. She goes, Glass, George Glass. Well, you can do lesson planning like that, you know, especially in the arts and especially for avant-garde. So, you know, you can just kind of look around and go, water bottles. We're going to be water bottles like that. And it's completely legitimate. Isn't that lovely? You say, oh, that was crazy. It is, and it's the kind of crazy we need. It's this kind of spontaneity. It's the kind of rule-breaking. It's the kind of freedom, kind of permission that we need as human beings to be able to adequately experience the world and take these damn governors, and when I say governors are these things that they put on speedometers on a rental vehicle or a fleet vehicle so you can only go so fast, and the governor will be on at 60, and it's limiting your speed. And I say there are ideas, there are assumptions in your culture that are limiting the freedom of your thought, and you must cast them away. And if you cast them away and you feel like I have finally arrived, I know now, then you need to keep throwing. And you need to cast away your assumptions until your feelings of certainty go with them. And then you feel completely lost and you have reached a state of self-annihilation, which is really just a clean house. You finally cleaned it out. You finally restored it. Because there's still junk up there you never dealt with. And once you get that attic clean and everything, oh, once you get those closets all cleaned out. But right now, they're teeming with the accumulative detritus and rubbish and waste of an unsolicited bulk mail of others' expectations and values. And because they're probably also selling you something really what's happening is you're drowning in ads, and they're all inside of you. And old Hardy White would love to go up in that brain. I'm trying to brainwash you. And they misuse it because brainwashing should be called brain painting. And that's not what I want to do. I'm going to truly brainwash you, which is not introduce another dominant idea, but get rid of dominant ideas altogether until your brain is all clean, like too clean. So, I think you cleaned it so much that you took off the finish. Let's take off the damn finish. No one asked me if I wanted glossy or semi-gloss or matte. Hey, Matt, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking Matt with an E. So you know, there's two WFMU kind of associated Matt Clarks, and they both have, the Clark has an E. But what if the Matt had an E and the Clark didn't? That's what I'm talking about, kind of thing. Finish. Oh, I'm trying to, my goodness, I'm trying to finish for both of us. I'm trying to, but not reach a conclusion. How do I get to the end without having done anything? I can do that. That's all. You've sensed that with, when I was in school, occasionally there would be a substitute teacher whose subject and whose expertise was BS and bamboozling. And they could talk for the whole time and keep you distracted so that you didn't misbehave necessarily. But then you realize, like, wow, I was just drawn in to a nonsensical discussion and everything. I left there. I have learned nothing. And that's so great. And the teacher feels great. And there's no burden. And they leave. And everything like that. Sometimes they get lazy and will just teach the lesson plan that the permanent teacher has left for them. But whenever they take initiative and they say, I'm just going to go off and I'm going to talk about the World's Fair, but then inaccurately, that's a great thing. Then I think there's something to be said for that. It is palate cleansing, and your brain is, and ask your scientists will say this, the brain is a palate. What do you mean, like the roof of your mouth or the ones with paint? That's a very good question. That's a very good question. You know what I've done? And this is so gross, but I think it's hilarious, is I took some uppers, some denture uppers, a palette, get it? Like palette, you know, and then put little paint, the colors of paint, like I was going to paint off of it, like palette. And then I called it dentures. And then I thought with the artist statement, it would be super clear, and it didn't get picked for the show, the group show. So I'm a little bummed about that. Being an artist is difficult, and you know that if you are one or aren't one. If you aren't one, it's even more difficult, I find. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to pursue my goals. You know, there came to a point where I was like, oh my goodness, these goals that I set as a young person that I'm pursuing, maybe I don't even want to achieve them anymore. Maybe I should get rid of them and pick new ones. But then I thought for a while, and I got to this conclusion that maybe all goals were sort of arbitrary, and at the end of the day, you just sort of do have to pick one and just do it. And then if you do it well, oh, that could be great and satisfying. If you don't, you just lie to yourself. No one will hold you accountable. You can go to your grave thinking you were a great baseball player in spite of your stats. Nothing wrong with that. No one will begrudge you that, especially on your deathbed. I have a friend who works with dying people, and he said, you know, there comes a point where it's just pointless to contradict somebody who's dying. Why would you? Why would you disabuse them of the thought? There's no reason to. If they say anything to you about the afterlife or their life or anything, why would you contradict them? What's the point now? You're competing with a dead person? Well, when do we start dying? At what point doesn't it matter anymore?
When we have to work with them in an office setting.
Well, that's a good answer. That's an okay answer. I mean, I didn't think it was a rhetorical question. I mean, by rhetorical question, I wanted us to rhetoric about it. That's not all questions have to be finally or definitively answered. Just answered. And it's a constant process of answering, I believe. Well, I ask you, how are you? You know, you don't, for all time, past, present, future. You know that's a question that has to be answered pretty continually and can change over the course of an hour. So, always A, B, B, answering. Abba. Are there two B's? Yeah. Always B, B, answering. Always B, B, answering. I had to put two, I wanted it to be Abba. So, there you go. I love you, and I wanted to treat you to something like that. Because you, to me, all you listeners, are like different Eurovision Song Contest songs to me. And y'all represent all the nations of the earth and how they all think that their costumes are fun or how their music is interesting. And we don't begrudge them that. We say, yes, you are the proud nation of Jerry from Jersey City. And bless you. And you're being the best at it. And you have your own anthem, which are the folk songs that you write. And you have your own cuisine, which is the homemade pizza that you think you make well. And all those things, I treat them as if they are the great traditions of your culture and nation state. And that we're all ambassadors, or all monarchs of these wonderful little quaint places. And why do I think that? Because of I pity your mortality. That's okay. I asked to be, that's what my prayer to God is, pity my mortality. So why would I not ask you the same thing? You say, well, I'm going to die eventually too. Well, I'm more than willing to reciprocate. Pity my mortality, I'll pity yours. Come on now. We can both do it. We're all pitiable. Look at y'all. So fragile. And we're all in a wonderful state of self-delusion. You know, I must be. See, Hardy White, not only is he deluding himself, but he's on this radio station that has a pretty good reputation, so he must be deluding other people. And, you know, I read somewhere that there are people that have a lot of cats who don't realize that there's some chemical in cat urine that causes a state of brain sort of psychosis, and it helps the cat be sort of parasitic. And you start thinking that you like the cat and it smells okay and that it's good to have a lot of cats or something like that. And it addles you. And gosh, I hope that's what's going on with us. And you bless me so much. We can both win. Now, people say, I don't mind if the cat's pee is making me trip secretly so that I think that the cat is my little friend baby. I welcome that. You know, any delusion that gets us through or advances love and caring, let's go ahead and I'm all for it. So if I'm deluding people at WFMU with the magical stink of my creative wee-wee, then I absolutely welcome it, and I'm so thankful for it. And they know what they're doing at the end. You would never put them down. So, yes, they know it. Hardy's all right, maybe. Look at that. His intentions are in the right place, just like the road to hell. What a good paving job. You know, the Bin Ladens were road pavers. That's how they started. And I don't know whether they did the road to hell, but I think they did some good ones, though, before. You know, you can't predict with families. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org. Worldwide, oh my goodness, Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you again next week.
Sidecar. Donate today. October is come. Breezing like a Harley D down that spiraling thoroughfare we call time. The Hellraiser in its sidecar. Palms outstretched in the crisp autumn air, careening into the ever earlier sunset. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. Enter. https://wfmu.org. Into your browser's query field. That's correct. A listener just like yourself can use an internet just like your own to sustain this 24-hour transmission. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. One half scroll downward, click the words pledge now. From there I will leave it to the spirit to guide you. Dearest listener, my dear generous intelligent listener, October is come. October is come. The Hellraiser in its sidecar. Donate today. October is come. Breezing like a Harley D down that spiraling thoroughfare we call time. The Hellraiser in its sidecar. Palms outstretched in the crisp autumn air, careening into the ever earlier sunset. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. Enter. https://wfmu.org. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. One half scroll downward, click the words pledge now. From there I will leave it to the spirit to guide you.
Thank you. I get it.
I'm sorry.